Hello and welcome to Not Often Heard, the podcast. My name is Gary.
And my name is Mark.
And this is where we get to go a little bit deeper, as if we didn't go deep enough, on our Sunday show, into certain topics. And we like to talk about it at extended length.
And very extended length.
And this time, and it's been a while. I mean, we've not done a pod since May.
When since we had Eurovision.
But we were waiting for the moment.
Yes.
And it has arrived.
The moment has been prepared for.
Eurovision is coming to the UK, and more specifically, Liverpool in 2023.
Liverpool.
I mean, how excited are you? Because I don't think I can describe how excited I am.
I am quite excited, I will say that. I am managing to keep a lid on my excitement because I know that all during Eurovision week, I have to be at work. But I know, Gary, that you won't be. And I know that you are like a little bubbling volcano ready to erupt.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. So we're here really to talk about this exciting news. And really, we're going to start by looking at how we got here, I suppose. Mm. How on earth did the UK end up hosting Eurovision in 2023 when we didn't win it? So let's wind back to May 2022.
May the 14th, 2022.
And, of course, Ukraine win by a landslide, really, with the televote.
Oh, yes.
The Eurovision 2022. UK came second, and that is thanks to us getting a really, really good jury vote.
Well, we came top in the jury vote, didn't we?
Yep. Absolutely smashed the jury vote. And things kind of went as expected at Eurovision, didn't it? Mm. We always knew there would be... We called it a solidarity vote, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Not sympathy.
No.
But solidarity to show that, you know, we were with Ukraine.
Yes. So not a surprise that they did win. However, of course, as soon as they did win, even before when we knew it was likely they were going to win, the questions, you know, were being asked about, well, if they do, where is it going to be hosted? Mm. And, you know, pretty much as soon as we'd won, those questions start being asked. And I think I said almost straight away, this is not going to happen in the Ukraine. I honestly don't think it's achievable.
Mm. I think everybody hoped it would be, but everybody kind of thought it probably wouldn't.
Yeah. You could argue that, yes, by rights it should be. They won, they get the right to host. That's the rule. But realistically, we even said, even if the war ended that day, could the country actually be ready to host in a year's time? Mm. And we didn't think that they could. However, that the EBU, to their credit, did actually allow Ukraine to assess properly how
they
could
host. And
they
handed over the pack and everything, didn't they, on that night?
They did. They handed it over to Ukraine and said, there you go. There's how you... the pack to how to stage a Eurovision, off you go.
Which, I mean, they'd had recent experience anyway.
True, 2017. Although that didn't go very smoothly.
No, it didn't. No. Let's move on.
So we then spend a couple of months, really, actually not a couple of months, it's just a month, wasn't it? Sorry.
It felt longer though, didn't it? It
felt like ages. About a month or so where... Ukrainian broadcast then looks at the options, puts together a bid, fills out the all-important security questionnaire, and all the paperwork was returned back to the EBU on the 15th of June, and much more quickly than we thought.
Yeah.
The EBU on the 17th of June come back with, we're sorry, but we've assessed the security risks. And we don't feel that the Ukraine can host Eurovision 2023.
No, not safe.
No. And therefore, as you know, according to the rules, we will then begin discussions with the country that placed second in Eurovision to see if they would be willing to host. So that's when we got the
news.
Who
came second? Who came second, Gary?
Oh, that's us.
That's us.
Now, I think you actually heard about it before I did. I think you told me.
Yes. I was at my school sports day.
Not competing. You know, he's not competing. He's not a child.
I was supervising. I am a teacher and I was supervising students when all of a sudden my phone just went berserk with people texting me saying, "Oh my God, the UK is hosting Eurovision." And I was like, "What? What? What?"
I know, proper like 10th Doctor.
Yeah.
Can't believe this. But it was true. However, we then got into this situation where it wasn't like the UK is hosting Eurovision. No, the BBC have been invited to host it.
Yes.
And the BBC haven't said yes straight away.
No. And they didn't say yes for a very long time.
It felt like absolutely ages. Mm. Absolutely ages. And in the meantime, we were getting statements from our Prime Minister at the time, Boris Johnson, and from the Culture Secretary, Nadine Dorris, basically going, "Well, we think the Ukraine should be doing this, really."
Yeah.
That didn't make me feel very optimistic, you know.
No.
Considering the financial challenges as well that the world currently faces, it's not going to be cheap to host Eurovision.
No.
The BBC is struggling financially and is looking at, you know, where it can cut back services and you know, make efficiencies, etc. And like it or not, this is going to cost them. It's not going to something that you're going to make a massive profit out of necessarily.
No, it really isn't.
It does require
a big expense.
It does require funds from the BBC to do this. However, we did finally. I'm just trying to find the date. There we go.
I think it was at some point in August, wasn't it?
It was actually July the 25th.
Ah, okay. So actually, probably only about 5 weeks after. It felt like 5 months, Gary.
It did. It really did.
The silence from the BBC was deafening.
So the BBC accepts and says, "Okay, we're up for it. We're going to do it." And that then triggers, obviously, a process where cities start clamouring to bid to host it.
It's like Pop Idol. Oh, pick me.
Sadly, our favourite Western Supermare didn't even make the long shortlist.
No. Despite having Martin Østerdal on speed dial.
So, the BBC then starts their plans and invites cities to put their hats into the ring. Really based on a set criteria in terms of having an arena that is suitable for at least 10,000 spectators, having a certain amount of hotel rooms, being within a reasonable distance of an international airport. There were quite a few hurdles to overcome that meant quite a lot of cities, you know, could be ruled out quite quickly. And also bear in mind that the city needs to put some money into this as well. It is going to cost. It's not a freebie. So, you know, all those had to be taken into consideration by the hosts, or the host, potential host cities, I should say. So we then found ourselves with a shortlist.
Was it, though?
Well, it did get a bit shorter, but so our shortlist was seven cities. So we had
Birmingham.
Yep.
Glasgow.
Yep.
Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool.
Yep.
Manchester.
Yep.
Newcastle.
Yep.
And Sheffield.
Sheffield. So quite surprising at the time that there was nothing south of Birmingham in the UK.
It was going to be a Northern Eurovision.
It was. You know, London, I guess, either wasn't interested or, you know, perhaps realised that they perhaps had very little chance because they've hosted Eurovision several times already.
Yeah.
They host a lot of big events as well. as it is. Mm-hmm. So then we start this frantic process of each city then putting together their bids and trying to pitch to see if they can make the short list that got announced.
They did an announcement for an announcement.
So ridiculous. So we on our regular shows, and if you want to go listen back, they will be on our Mixcloud page if you want to go. We did look, you looked at each city over 7 weeks,
yeah,
didn't you?
Over 7 weeks, we looked at every single city, and I did a fact file of really fun and interesting facts. It was right in my wheelhouse. It really was. It was my bag.
Go listen to facts. It is interesting, honestly. And I think, I don't know about you, but we were secretly hoping it wasn't going to be Glasgow. We hoped it wasn't going to be that. Newcastle.
No.
Leeds, no, not really. No. Sheffield at a push. For me, yeah, anyway, because yeah, it's commutable. Birmingham, again, it's commutable. Mm. Liverpool, Manchester, because you're based up in that direction, in
yes,
that part of the country, that's good for you.
Up at Northwest.
Which means it's good for me, because I can talk nicely and see if I can book standing room only in the garden for the week.
You pitch a tent.
So we had our own sort of shortlist, really, isn't it, of like Sheffield, yeah, Birmingham, did, Manchester, Liverpool,
yeah,
if we had to. And then we get to September and we get the shortlist. As you said, we had the announcement that there was going to be an announcement.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And we find out that the final two contenders are Glasgow and Liverpool. Now, Glasgow, yeah, was no surprise, was it?
Oh, I think Glasgow was a firm favourite right from the get-go. As soon as the grand final finished on May the 14th, Glasgow, I think, put itself out there as a firm favourite to host. Because they basically emptied out May 2023, didn't they?
Yeah. And, you know, they were very supportive right from the off. Nicola Sturgeon, mm-hmm, the First Minister, was very supportive and saying, bring it up here. Brilliant. Yeah, we're up for it. Yeah. We'll do it.
And there was, they had for, I can't think of the word, but they've got form. That's it. They got form for it because of Eurovision Fire Saga was filmed at the Glasgow Arena, wasn't it?
It was, yes. The Hydro, yeah, stood in for an arena in Edinburgh in the, yeah, story. I'm sure that made the people of Glasgow happy. You had this weird situation where they had to sort of composite the Hydro into the streets of Edinburgh.
Yeah.
This shot footage.
Strange.
Very odd. And again, I guess it would have been a case of, fiction becoming reality, if Eurovision were to be staged at the Hydro. Now, I don't know about you, but I've seen little bits and pieces of sort of promo the bids that some of the cities had put out, but I hadn't seen anything that had got the effort put into it that Liverpool's promo vid had, which I thought was wonderful. It was a little vid which part of their pitch, and I think it started with "I'll give you my heart and my soul if you give me your love,"
yeah,
and it said Sonia, County Cork, 1993. Which is really cute. And it's a quote from Better the Devil You Know, Sonia's Eurovision, yeah, song in 93 that came second in Ireland that year. Mm-hmm. So straight away, you're like, oh, the person who's put this together is a proper Eurovision fan.
Oh, they know their onions.
They know, yeah. There's a fan there on the committee.
Yeah.
And it then launches into this fantastic promo vid, I thought, about how it's got such a rich musical heritage and what the people are like, etc. And just generally how great Liverpool would be.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I hadn't really seen anything like that from Glasgow. They may have done something like that and just chosen not to release it to the public. And it's just...
Maybe.
But, you know, why not? Showcase it. Be proud of it. Mm. Is what I would say. So then we get to that fateful day. And that was, oh God, it wasn't that long ago. Man to look back again, and I shouldn't. It was
about 2 weeks ago,
Friday the 7th of October.
2 weeks ago, this. 2 weeks ago tomorrow, us, as we're recording this.
We find out that there's going to be an announcement on The One Show.
Ooh, with Graham Norton, no less.
Yes, Graham there. So, really excited. Unfortunately, I have to sit through The One Show to find out. I think you refused to.
I did, and I was less like, oh, well, just watch a clip on iPlayer later. People will tell me.
So they wheel out Graham, and you know, they're in a little sparkly set. They've got live links up to Glasgow and to Liverpool, and they've got like Lawrence Chaney from Drag Race supporting Glasgow, and they've got Sonia in Liverpool.
Oh, of course they do.
So grateful for, you know, who else are you going to get? Why not?
Why exactly?
So Graham, obviously, he's building up to the moment, and he's got this envelope to open, and he's like, and the host city is, and he inches out the card from the envelope, and he's like, the host city is, and you know, the eagle-eyed viewers amongst us will realise there's been a massive cock-up, and they've actually already printed the logo for the host city and everything on the back of the card. So yeah. While he's teasing and trying to build up tension, you just stare at the TV close enough and you'll be able to read it says Liverpool 2023. So for about 2 or 3 seconds before he says it, I was shouting at the TV going, it's Liverpool!
It's Liverpool!
It's Liverpool!
It's Liverpool!
It's Liverpool! And I think we both said, we'd almost resigned ourselves to the fact that it wasn't going to be Liverpool.
I was 95% convinced it was going to be Glasgow. I really was.
It's the bigger arena. Everybody expected it. It was the favourite.
Definitely.
All the odds were in their favour, it felt like. The fact that BBC have got a broadcast facility right next door, pretty much.
Yeah.
Stone's throw from the Hydro. Everything was pointing towards Glasgow. And I'd already looked at hotel rooms earlier on that day in Glasgow and just cried. I may not be staying 50 miles away.
I need to sell a kidney.
Pretty much. It was insane.
I can imagine.
The prices of hotel rooms.
I bet if you looked the day after, they were quite cheap.
Oh, yes.
Which is a shame, because Glasgow is a lovely city. We have been. It is lovely.
So, yes, we go on. It's Liverpool. Hooray. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. That personally, from a personal point of view, that's good for us. Because it means we can actually go and see something, hopefully, live for the first time. We've talked about Eurovision for so long, so many years on the show. But we've never gone. We've never actually gone to a contest. And we now hope we can actually see something of Eurovision on a live stage.
Something.
So, Liverpool it is. Great. Now, Mark, you have worked in Liverpool, haven't you?
I have, a few
years back.
Yeah.
So, what can you say is in Liverpool's favour? What makes it a good place for Eurovision, in your opinion?
Okay. So, I think one of the big things is the people of Liverpool. They are so friendly, so welcoming. They'll really open up to the Eurovision community and kind of like envelop them in a great big scouse hug sort of thing. So I think the people absolutely is one of the things that makes it the best place.
And that's something you want, really, isn't it? When this is we have to keep reminding ourselves that this is the UK hosting Eurovision on behalf of Ukraine. So that is at the forefront, I think, of the planning. And so there's a decent amount of Ukrainian national people in Liverpool, and you want a community that's going to welcome people from all over the world, and particularly people that, you know, perhaps from Ukraine that are currently living in the UK.
Yeah.
So you, I guess you, that's where it's a bonus. Like you said, if the people are really so welcoming, so friendly, then they can cope with this massive influx of people from all across the world and will be nice to everybody, I suppose, is what we want.
Yeah.
So apart from the people, anything else?
I think definitely the history of Liverpool, I think, is a massive selling point. They're now I've noticed in a lot of the news like briefings that Eurovision are pointing out that they're calling Liverpool the city of pop. And I think it absolutely is right to capitalise on that. I mean, you've got possibly the most famous pop group ever in the Beatles from Liverpool. But I remember one of the things that I was speaking about when I was doing my Liverpool facts was just that how many different pop artists, musical groups and singers are actually from Liverpool. Yeah. They've got a pedigree. They really do.
Yeah, it's amazing. The rich history, you know, Cilla Black, you know, national treasure in the UK.
Yeah.
It's also a UNESCO City of Music, which, you know, there aren't a lot of those in the world. So, you know, absolutely, if we're talking music, Liverpool is the place. It's got
it absolutely is.
And it's a great hook from the UK angle, you know, from that part of hosting. It's a great hook to hang your Eurovision off. And you can trade off that rich heritage that they've got. Anything else?
I think the actual kind of like location, the waterfront, I think will be absolutely spectacular. I really do think it. The whole kind of like Eurovision Village and the, because they've got like a conference centre nearby as well.
Yeah.
I think that whole area near the docks on the waterfront of the Mersey, I think it will look spectacular. I really do. And I can just, because they often have the huge, great big ocean liners pulling into the docks as well.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine getting some of those images, these huge ocean liners pulling in for Eurovision and things like that?
Well, I'm hoping, you know, when they do the kind of red carpet type event the Sunday before the first semi-final, I don't know, they call it the orange carpet, the purple carpet, whatever colour you're going for. I'm wondering, you know, instead of a carpet, can we not just have boats? Can we have can we have people arriving on boats and then stepping off onto the carpet? How cool would that be?
Yeah.
You know, logistically it might be a nightmare, I don't know. Maybe some little pedalos or something. Each act has to pedal up onto the carpet. To be interviewed by Ryland or whoever is selected to cover the carpet.
Yeah, okay.
That's my dream. I mean, I've also heard talk of, this may be just a rumour, but like having 20 life-size cardboard cutouts type things of Sonia throughout scattered throughout the city. Now, I don't know if this is, you know, she'll be pointing you towards where the Eurovision venue is and you just follow Sonia to go to Eurovision, which I think I love the idea of that.
Yeah.
Or if it would just be one of those things where, you know, a little game to get you to go and explore Liverpool, hunt Sonia or something, looking for Sonia, search for Sonia. Oh my God. Copyright that now.
Yeah. Get that into the patent office, Gary.
I think that'd be cool. And maybe the final item on the search for Sonia is Sonia. And she just stands there.
Just install her somewhere.
She just stands there all day saying, "Aya," and having selfies taken with people. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I know I'm talking a lot about Sonia, but she needs to be there in some capacity.
I'm sure she will.
Because she's just one of the biggest champions for Eurovision. The fact that she's a local as well. Just means that you'd be stupid not to have her in there somewhere on that, and then mixed in with the Ukrainian element that they want to bring, and the trying to showcase, you know, some of the Ukrainian culture, the postcards. I think, you know, they want to heavily influence those as well. Mm. Now, whether, you know, there are different ways of tackling that. It could be showing Ukrainians in the UK, and also back over, obviously back in Ukraine. And maybe you could do a bit of a swap. You also show some Britons over in Ukraine or something.
Oh, that's not a nice... That's a nice idea, that is, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
You know, there's... Not bad at all. There's quite a lot of scope there, I think, between the two countries to work out how you showcase both in different ways. There's lots of...
Maybe we could have Sonia in every postcard.
Excellent. Like, you know, Russia, when they did it in 2009, I think it was... Mm. Each postcard featured a model with an elaborate hairstyle that reflected the country it was introducing. Oh, okay. So we could just have Sonia with some elaborate hairstyles. She'd be up for that.
Oh, I'm sure she would.
Or just green screen her into a postcard of a landmark. That the 1980s contest used to do on a budget.
Yeah.
If we need to. So it sounds like Liverpool has got a lot going for it in terms of location, the people, you know, the musical heritage on it. And I guess also the transport links as well in terms of its, we're thinking about airports, Liverpool Airport.
Yeah.
Is it Liverpool called John Lennon?
Liverpool John Lennon.
Liverpool John Lennon. You've got Manchester Airport that isn't too far away.
Oh, it's half an hour, 40 minutes down the M62, really. It's very close.
Quite close. And, you know, slightly further away, you have got Birmingham, which is a couple of hours.
Yeah, 2 hours, maybe tops.
Yeah. So in the Midlands, you know, a couple of hours drive, you know, depending on where you're flying in from. But I think between those three, you've got...
You should have most bases covered.
Yeah, you're covering most European destinations, I should think. Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, we're not that big a country, really. Wherever you are, you're not going to be a million miles away from an airport.
Absolutely not. Yeah, exactly. It's a few hours drive, maybe, to get to the venue on that. And then also the fact that it's ideally located, I suppose, in the country. It's got good, you know, motorway networks, etc., that plug into it. It's got a good train service as well that's well connected from London, but also from the Midlands as well, and also the kind of the Pennines, you know, that kind of the Yorkshire, you know, M62 corridor type thing. So it's got a hell of a lot going for it.
Yeah.
And, of course, the BBC Broadcast Centre at Salford, which has become the home of Eurovision now. And the production team is based up there. That's not that far away. Less than an hour away from Liverpool.
Less than an hour, yeah.
For that. So, you know, for the BBC, ideally placed. You could argue that Glasgow was slightly better with it having it right next door. But, you know, it's second best, I think, for that. So that's ideally placed technologically, shall we say.
Yeah.
And you never know. I mean, I don't think they exist anymore, but do you remember this morning, Granada Studios used to, you know, come from the Albert Dock?
Yeah, they did.
And those studios, you know, lasted quite a while after this morning had vacated, you know, various shopping channels and stuff did use the Albert Dock studios. I'm not sure if they were mothballed, but it'd be lovely if they were still around and they could use them again, I suppose, because it's something in the city.
I don't know if they've been taken over by like retail units and things like, and hospitality units in the Albert Docks now. I'm not sure, to be honest, because the Albert Docks is now like full of like shops and a few bars and restaurants and things like that.
Is the floating weather map still there?
I don't think so.
Oh,
no.
It's gone.
Mm. Yeah.
Never mind. So, Mark, lots of positive things about Liverpool, but is there anything where you think Liverpool is not, you know, quite as good as perhaps in some areas that another candidate city would have been?
I can't think of anything massively. I was a little bit concerned about public transport, maybe. Yeah, they've got the trains in Liverpool, but and they've got buses. I know the other cities like Glasgow and Manchester have trams and the underground and things like that.
Mm.
But I kind of assumed that the EBU have looked at all of this and have thought, well, actually, it has what we need. There's nothing that I would think, oof, well, I don't think Liverpool is very good for that or for that. The only thing I would say is I do still just wish it was in Manchester because it was closer.
True. I think it's slightly disappointing in terms of Liverpool because of the size of the venue. Only you're going to be able to accommodate around 10,000 to 11,000 spectators. So it really is at the bottom end of the minimum requirements by the EBU for hosting on that. And I say, you know, that counts against Liverpool, but that's only because I personally think it's going to make it harder to get tickets.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Now, there's normally quite, you know, a big demand for tickets anyway for Eurovision, particularly the live shows. But the rehearsals, not quite as bad. I mean, there have been some years where there were massive gaps and they were just ferrying school children in to come and look at an afternoon rehearsal. Because what people often don't realise is that Eurovision is not one night. I'm still surprised in the amount of people that don't realise that there are semi-finals that take place. So semi-1 on the Tuesday, semi-2 on the Thursday, live final on the Saturday. However, that doesn't mean you've got to get tickets for one of three shows. There are actually 9 shows that you can potentially get tickets for. So, for the uninitiated, Monday night, there will be a dress rehearsal, which is called the jury semi-final number 1, which is where the acts perform. It is done as if it exactly was the live show. And this is the performance that the juries vote on for semi-1.
Yeah.
Tuesday afternoon, there is another dress rehearsal. This time, it's not being judged. There's no juries or anything watching. This is purely a dress rehearsal to make sure everything runs smoothly ahead of show number 3, which takes place on the Tuesday night, which is the live semi-final that is broadcast across Europe.
Yeah.
We move on to Wednesday, and we're going in the same pattern again.
Yeah.
Jury final in the evening, semi-final 2. Thursday afternoon, dress rehearsal again for semi-final 2. Then in the evening, semi-final 2 live. Friday night, jury final performance.
Final
performance. Saturday afternoon, and the afternoon shows are often called family shows. Saturday afternoon, dress rehearsal for the grand final, and then obviously the live grand final on the Saturday night. So that's 9 shows you can get tickets for. So I don't know about you, but I personally am steering away from the idea of going to see the live final on the Saturday night, much as I would like to. It's going to cost a lot of money. Tickets will be expensive, unfortunately. And
it will be hideously long. You're going to be in that arena, 6 hours?
Minimum.
Yeah.
If not longer, yes. You know, the show is about 4 hours, but then obviously you've got to get in there, you've got to get out, you've got to get home.
Yeah.
That's going to be a long day. So I'm not quite sure. So my thinking towards tickets is to look at some either the jury, you know, semis and final. So that's Monday, Wednesday, Friday night. Mm. Or some of the family shows that happen on the afternoons. Mm. And maybe if we wanted to see the grand final, we would see it Saturday afternoon rather than. Yeah. And hopefully tickets are slightly cheaper and they're slightly easier to get because people are too busy targeting the live shows.
Yeah. I quite like the idea of the Friday night jury show.
Yeah, I quite fancy that. But we shall wait and see.
We will. Because they might be $100 million.
Well, we've already had several countries, unfortunately, say that they can't afford to participate in 2023, which is a real big shame, including North Macedonia, Bulgaria, and Montenegro. That was it. All sadly, for various reasons, mainly budgetary, have said, sorry, we're going to need to skip this year, I'm afraid. So, all good for Liverpool. But what do we expect from the BBC then, Mark? Considering it is a world-renowned broadcaster, it really does set the benchmark that a lot of broadcasters aspire to be. Is there anything you hope to get from them?
I mean, I don't know about what I hope to get. I think it will be a slick show. I think with all the coverage that they did of, for instance, the Queen's funeral, I think that they can really... This is coming out wrong. That they can really deliver kind of like live performances. I know that sounds terrible when you talk about the funeral of the Queen, but they are very good at those sorts of big events. And we saw it with bits to do with the Commonwealth Games as well.
And of course, the Queen's Jubilee.
Oh, yes.
In the summer
the
as well.
Jubilee, yeah. I want it to be a really good fusion of kind of like Ukrainian and British kind of like ideals and ideas and music and concepts. I really want it to be kind of like a joining.
Yeah, a true co-host of we are doing this on your behalf.
I'd like to see a Ukrainian host.
Yeah, Timur, who hosted in 2017, has done Junior Eurovision as well. Mm-hmm. Hot favourite. You know, he was commentating this year from a bunker for Ukraine. You know, he wasn't sitting in a nice air-conditioned booth in Italy. You know, I'm sure he could have done. I'm sure if they wanted to, they would have flown him out there and they would have let him go with all the other commentators. But no, he was back in Ukraine. So, yes, that'd be nice. I think the BBC are absolutely the right people to do this. I know some people were like, well, just give it to Sweden. SVT can do it. We know that, you know, they do something like this every year with Melody Festival and their national final. So why not? You know, you can trust them. Or even go back to the Netherlands. They've hosted it recently. Or give it back to Italy. They've just proved they can do it. The BBC, as you said, have a fantastic track record. And those events that you talked about them hosting, that they don't do that alone. They are used to working with broadcast partners. Because, you know, the EBU will also pour their resources in. I think I'd almost discounted the weekend that it was going to be because I think there was an FA Cup final was scheduled for then. So the 13th, Saturday the 13th, we thought was likely to be FA Cup final weekend. And we were like, ooh. That's a big sporting event. Again, huge live coverage, which is unpredictable depending on how when it ends, etc. So the schedule is in flux.
It was like that this year. We wouldn't know if it was going to end on time.
Yeah. So we didn't think they would go for that weekend, but they have. They've announced the 13th. The BBC will make a fantastic job of this, working with, if we need to get satellite trucks in from across the country or from across Europe, they will do. They'll work with third parties to put on a fantastic show. Although I do wonder, because we found out here in the UK about last week, I think it was, the King Charles's coronation is scheduled for the Saturday before the 6th of May. So, again, this is another big national event. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an hours-long live national broadcast, covering various events. There's going to be links all over London and stuff. It's going to be a very complex operation, I'm sure. And we did speculate if that date was released, the BBC just held their head in their hands and went, no. Can we not have pushed this to June? Give us a break. But it'll be fine. You know
it
what?
It will be.
They'll do it.
It'll be all right on the night.
Exactly. It's fine. If we don't have the resources, here in the UK, they will be brought in. All the satellite trucks and the links and stuff like that, the technical expertise that's needed will be brought in. And that is how it works on every Eurovision now. It's not like it was years and years ago where it literally was down to that broadcaster and it's like, you organise Eurovision, you go and sort that out for us. And the EBU would just take a back seat. The EBU now are much more hands-on. They bring in the best people to work on it along with the national broadcaster. And they get talent from all across Europe to come and pitch in and help with that, to put on the best show possible. So I have really high hopes. I think they're going to smash it. We're going to do the UK proud. We're going to do Ukraine proud as well, which I think is the most important thing. Do you think we can ride the wave like we did back in 97 and 98? You know, we won in 97, and in 98 we came second with a really good song. The Marnie, Where Are You? Can we repeat that? Okay, we didn't win, but that's fine. But we're hosting, and we've got some really goodwill. Eurovision is in the UK. Eurovision has such a positive. I'm trying to think of the word now.
Vibe.
Yes.
A vibe, isn't there?
For years, it's been, you know, a figure of fun. It's been derided. It's been seen as camp nonsense and we just laugh at silly songs. That is so much has changed this year. It's unbelievable. Yeah. The BBC are taking Eurovision seriously, it seems. And the public are. Everybody's getting behind it.
I think next year, I think we'll see Eurovision fever hit the UK. And I think it will be mainly down to the fact that we're hosting it. But I think... also with tap music behind getting us a good song and a good artist, I see no reason why we can't do well again next year. You know, we just got to capitalize on how we did this year. You know, lightning doesn't strike twice. So, you know, as much as can we not just get Sam Ryder again? Because he's just the loveliest man. But I think, I think the public will get behind whoever is picked.
Yeah.
I think.
And I think it has shut down all those arguments of Europe hates us. They will never vote for us, no matter what song we send. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they don't like us, so they won't vote for us. That was blown out of the water.
Oh, absolutely.
This year.
Yeah.
Because, okay, we didn't win the televote. I think we came about fourth.
Yeah.
That's still an amazing result.
It is.
That's people picking up their phones, logging into the apps and saying, we like that song. And it does, we don't care that it comes from the UK.
Just takes a good song, a good singer, and a good performance. That's all it takes.
Exactly. And we have been saying that for ages, for years. and now we've been proved right. So we can be quite smug about that. We only hope that can be repeated. And I think that the fact that the BBC have also thrown the hat in for Junior Eurovision this year. And if you think about how... last minute, that must have been as well. Because, you know, we've gone from a situation in sort of, you know, May, June, where what normally happens is the Eurovision team, you know, go and work on other stuff for a little bit. Mm. And then, you know, they come back together towards the end of the year or early the next year to start looking at the bid again.
Yeah.
For the following contest. And that's not happening this year. The BBC is riding that wave of goodwill and good reputation of Eurovision, and let's get in on Junior. Let's let's fully participate. I don't know. It's great. There's a lot to be excited about for the next year. I know some people are hoping that this will lead to some kind of Swedish, Norwegian style, you know, multiple week selection show. Maybe. I don't think we're quite there yet. We need to work our way towards that if the BBC are interested.
Yeah, I still think we need to educate the British public still a little bit more about Eurovision.
Yeah, but it's possible. It could be done with some work, with keeping up that credibility. And if it got the numbers and got people watching, then the BBC would do it. Because that's what they want. They want to get the viewing figures. They want people watching that show to make it worthwhile for them paying out for staging it in the first place. Mm-hmm. So the Junior Eurovision entry, the confidence that they have to put the semis on BBC One for the first time ever in the UK, not relegating to BBC, you know, 3 or 4, which has a much smaller audience, even though everybody has access to it. It's a channel that's available right across the UK now. There's no digital divide in that sense.
No.
But it was never promoted to BBC One, even though, you know, it was all paid for. It was very cheap television, and you know, it filled 2 hours really cheaply compared to some of the stuff that they do show. It was a bargain, but they never won because of the way Eurovision was perceived.
Yeah,
they just wouldn't do it.
The perception of it.
So I'm so grateful that they've got the you know, I said the balls to do it, to say, yeah, right, we're going to do it. Yeah. We're going to put the semis on and we're going to see how it goes. Do people tune in? And, you know, can we get those bums on seats? I'm kind of hoping as well they'll do I'd love to see them do a behind, you know, a daily, today at Eurovision style show.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Today at Wimbledon, or, you know, the Strictly It Takes Two kind of companion show.
Bake Off Extra Slice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, because stuff is happening every day. So why not have a daily show? Maybe they'll use the One show for that format.
You never know, actually.
That's you know, it's a live show that goes out at 7:30, I think. Mm. So it's prime time. And you could have people, you know, bringing guests. You could interview them about what's going on that night, and, you know, people who performed the previous night. How did it go? You know, are you disappointed that you didn't get through? Are you great?
Yeah.
Are you really happy that you did? News, gossip, that kind of thing. Somewhere we need to have that show. Don't, you know, fling it out on BBC Three if you want to, but I think we need to have that support show, just to make sure everybody's aware of what's happening and. You know, that general hubbub around Liverpool, and just showcase exactly all the event, what's going on, and all the events that are there. Obviously, honestly, just put me in charge.
I was going to say, do you want the gig?
I'm really pitching for the job here, and I'll do it.
You really are.
I'll do it. Me and Sonia.
Kaz and Son.
Oh, well, I don't know about you, but I'm really excited.
Are you? Really?
Just a little bit. So stay tuned. We will be giving as much coverage as we can for Liverpool 2023. We'll be following all the national finals. We'll be following the preparations across Liverpool in the build-up to May next year. And you never know. Fingers crossed. Ring in a prayer. We'll get some tickets. And we'll actually be able to go, and we can tell you exactly what it's like to be in an arena.
At Eurovision.
For Eurovision. Thank you for listening to us waffle for the last 40, odd, nearly 50 minutes. I hope you've enjoyed it. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.